Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, or whatever time of day it is, wherever you are, whenever you are. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, one and all, for being here and sharing a little bit of your time, and hope you have some fun with us. I know I'm going to have some fun. My guest tonight is Robert Owings, and he's got an incredible background, and we're going to have fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And tomorrow, at least in my part of the planet, we are going to have what's called a black moon. And most people have heard of a blue moon, which is the second full moon in one month, in one calendar month. But a black moon is much more rare, and it's the second new moon in a calendar month. And it's really fascinating what's going on. The people who are fascinated with astrology and the meaning of astronomical events are very excited because the new moon is considered a time to make new plans, let go of anything you need to let go of, and create big shifts in your life. So the idea is that the black moon is even more powerful for that kind of work. And so they're all excited and ready to do whatever ceremonial or ritual thing they're going to do to take advantage of this moment in time. However, there are people who are connecting this event, which is totally predictable. It's not like these things happen. You know, we're not superstitious tribal people who suddenly have an eclipse and the sky gets dark and they're terrified that the gods are angry. No, we know that this stuff's going to happen. It's plotted out well in advance. We know exactly what's going to happen. But there are people who are basically doing the same thing that those old tribal people were doing, except they're connecting the dark of this night, the deep darkness of this night, to some obscure verses in the Bible and talking about it being the end times and terrible things are going to happen and the usual be afraid, be very afraid. I'm jaded about this because I have probably survived, I've lost count whether it's 7 or 8 end of the world scenarios in my lifetime, and I'm still here. And every time the people that were freaked out were extremely freaked out. Some of them changed their lives and ran to the hills with firearms and ammunition and food ready to survive the crisis. And it happens every time. There's just an excuse for people to freak out. And it's mind-boggling to me. It's totally mind-boggling to me. And when you see it from both sides of that equation, the people who are excited about this moment in time and the people that are totally terrified, it really shows how we create our own reality and our own sense of meaning in everything, absolutely everything. So Friday, if you happen to be in the place where the moon is going to be a new moon, it's going to be intense in whatever way it's intense. And I know my body reacts to lunar cycles, so it'll be interesting to see what it feels like and what happens. But I encourage you to enjoy this very unusual event called the Black Moon and kind of giggle if you run into anybody who's sure it's the end of the world. Don't think the world's going to end on Friday. And besides, it's already tomorrow in Australia. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's have some fun with my guest, Robert Owings. Robert, thanks so much for being on the show.
David, thank you for having me on.
And Robert, we connected because I saw an article that you had written about shamanism. And I was fascinated with what you said and also tickled by a couple of things you said in the article. And then I looked at the kind, your background and the work that you've done. So this show tiptoes around shamanism a lot. We occasionally interview people that are shamans. I do shamanic work, so I have the piece that I add to all of that. But I don't think we've ever done the show where we talked about shamanism.
Oh, just how unusual, I would think.
Right. What is shamanism? And, you know, how does it fit in what goes on in the world? And that seems to be what you know a lot about.
Well, I know what I know. Whether it's a lot is... and I wouldn't begin to think it's that much. But it, the more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. So
right, which shows that you're a very wise man. The question I always ask each guest is, how did you wind up here? How did you wind up doing what you're doing? What was the path? What was the walk about?
It was more of a coming to recognize something that had been in me from my earliest childhood, and otherwise trying to get through my life and the world in I was an artist, so that did give me a lot of excuses to color outside the lines. But in general, it's at some point these bigger ontological questions about what is it all about and why was it I had these intuitions and interest in what these spiritual connections that were very hard for me to explain in an acceptable, logical way to myself caused me to take on a real in-depth study, reading everything I could, and ultimately going to a graduate school around all this to come to an understanding of what was really what was natural to me all along. And so it was, I don't know if that answers it, but that's sort of it in a nutshell. It was just an evolving and coming to recognize something that had always been there.
Well, and it's fascinating that you started in art. I think you have a degree in design, don't you?
Yes, I do.
You know, there are many mystics and many people in history that have given us tremendous insight who were creative and had an artistic side and were well known for their art. So that path is a well-trodden path. We were just talking about your degree, which just sounds so wonderful. Would you tell everybody what the graduate degree is?
It's technically a master's of philosophy and religion, but I went to there's a private graduate school in San Francisco called California Institute of Integral Studies, and there's a department they have that is consciousness and cosmology and philosophy, and that's what I was in. But that is very sort of the nice sanitized title for what it's about, but it's really people that are there that are on deep spiritual paths and looking for all kinds of connections, and there's a very myriad paths and people with really some very brilliant professors and people who are there who are exploring consciousness. And that's really at the core of my question is, what is consciousness? Why is it that we have this modicum of it, where we're in this awkward stage between animal with instinct and this sort of deeper self-reflection of who we are, and trying to see what this is all about and how that connects to these bigger cosmological agencies that resonate, at least for me, and obviously for some other people. And so in this study program, I was allowed a lot of leeway and studied a lot of different things, from Buddhist cosmology, shamanism, Jungian psychology, women's studies around the Great Mother Goddess and all of that tradition. And, and I had kind of built on my undergraduate degree. I was in college, I majored in history. So I had a real extensive background on what had taken place on the planet, at least as far as human beings. And I was able to sort of connect a lot of dots.
Right. You know, I'm tempted kind of flippantly to say, so what's your conclusion? But
well, there's just a lot, there's a hell of a lot more dots.
So right. Right. Still, well, I want to take a step back because you used a term that I don't think many people understand, which is cosmology. Give us a little bit more understanding of what that's about. I have a sense
Well, there are two sort of definitions of cosmology. There's cosmology is people that study astrophysics and what is the that side of hard physics science as far as the universe. And then the philosophical side is, what is that relationship of spirit, mind, soul, whatever these things are, which are very elusive and arguably multiple different definitions to all that. But how does the human experience, or for that matter, just life on, and we have to kind of bring it down to what's happened on this little small planet. What's it all about, and how does what is it, the meaning, or is there meaning, and how do you apply that more expanded, both macro and micro view of the human experience in the bigger cosmological structure, and where do we fit in? What's it about? What are we doing? And so it's that.
All the important questions that people either struggle with or try to avoid. But I think for most people on this planet, the convenient way to deal with that is religion.
That's the dumbed down version, yes. And that's not to disparage religion. It's just my experience with, because I had such a hard time not having my questions answered, and I see it still reflected in most institutional religions, where religion is based on faith, and you're accepting something, and I'm oriented to experience something. I want to shake people, wake them up. Go out and find your own connection to the divine, and rather than just taking some accepted creed and then trying to march to that without ever really having a deep connection experience to what it's about.
Right, right. It's a convenient way to have answers to unanswerable questions. And not have to struggle. On the other hand, many religions, at least Western religions, if you disagree or say something that's outside the box that they've created, you're considered a heretic and you can be in grave danger. And I think, doesn't heretic just mean someone who questions?
Sure. You're disturbing the accepted mindset. And so much of this, these institutions are really designed to, it's a form of mind control.
Well, there is certainly a major aspect of social structure and control in all of them. It's a way to structure a society. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially since most people are not going to struggle with the questions. They're just going to do what they need to do in their daily life.
Yeah.
But I heard a shaman speaking in a circle at a reservation where I was very honored to be sitting in the circle and a fly on the wall. And one of his offhanded jokes was, I'm a born again heretic.
Yeah. I like that.
Right. His point being that everything was up for question and none of what he believed fit in the box.
Yeah. The core essences of in shamanism is for shamans is there's it's subversive. It will question and challenge almost any preconceived supposition.
And it's fascinating to me that even in the very large world of contemporary shamanism, there's orthodoxy.
And
there are people who will work from a perspective of this is the way we do this. Do you want to do it our way?
Yes.
And if you're not going to do it our way, you don't really fit into this particular group and this what we're doing. They give you the hairy eyeball. And
yeah, this is why I avoid being I get invited to go into these circles and things, and I just say, no, you don't want me to be there, really, because it's not.
Yeah.
What they're doing, I'm not saying it's wrong or bad or whatever. It's just that's not how it doesn't. So anyway.
Well, yeah, it's another orthodoxy. It's another place for where people can learn important things and a community. And I think it's one of the things that humans do. And it's part of the reason that the shaman, you know, wise woman, witch, whatever the term is in the particular culture, typically was someone who was not part of the general society. They usually lived outside the village. There might be a small group of them together. But they're, other than the cultures that are based on shamanism, where daily life has a shamanic perspective, if that was not the culture, there was somebody that the village depended on to take care of them, but was not necessarily someone that was going to be around all the time because they were different. They were eccentric.
Yeah.
The kind of folks that wind up in psych hospitals now in many cases.
Quite, yes.
In Western culture,
yes.
Which is too bad. I've worked in locked psych units and I could... There were people who had ongoing conversations with their, in quotation marks, voices, and I could see who they were talking to. So who was crazy? You know, it was really fascinating to sort that out, realizing in another culture, that same person would have been recognized at a very early age as having something to offer, something special, and
yes,
would have been assigned to an elder that worked that way and taught how to use their gift. And instead, they just wind up being more and more eccentric, and at some point, they're too eccentric to take care of themselves, and they wind up in a psych hospital. And I was just like, oh, this is just wrong. You know, which is not to say I can hear, you know, there are probably people in the background going, but there are people that really are crazy and shouldn't be on the street. And, you know, yeah, there are people that are coming apart at the seams. But there are other people who really are just too strange for other people to tolerate.
Yeah, that is a sad truth.
So give me your sense. I see shamanism in terms of how it manifests in the world as being kind of showing up two ways. One is an individual shaman, medicine man, healer, whoever it happens to be. There might be one or two or three or a family, and they provide, in effect, a service. They're part of taking care of the needs of community as much as the hunters are, or the people who grow food. Mm-hmm. They provide something that the village needs. And then there are cultures where the entire culture is based on a worldview, a cosmological view that is shamanic. Everybody looks at things that way. There are the people who are the practitioners.
Yeah.
But everybody sees it that way.
Right.
So the one that comes to mind is, well, lots of Native American culture is basically that worldview. But Tibetan Buddhism is a shamanic mm-hmm. culture.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of places in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Korea, with all of its modern business and everything, is, according to their own censuses, about every 10th person in Korea is a shaman or practices.
Really?
Or, yeah.
Huh.
There are places where it's very embedded and in part of the culture, always has been. It really was in the West too, until really coming out of into the Age of Enlightenment, where it was finally between that and structures of Christianity. It was pretty much put out.
There was that deal that was cut between science and the church with a big C.
Yeah.
They were scooping up people that had had strange ideas that didn't fit church teachings and calling them heretics and either locking them up or killing them.
Thing for Jesus, he didn't show up for a second coming around then.
Right.
Exactly.
He was certainly a shaman in the way that he approached everything.
But the
deal basically was science could have the physical world and say whatever they wanted to and figure out whatever they wanted to, but they couldn't cross the line into anything that was non-physical or spiritual. And that really, you know, that's an old deal that's been around for, 500 years, 1,000 years, and it's, I think, part of the reason that scientists mostly will not cross the line.
Well, they, until just recently, when the quantum physics is,
right.
These guys are going, well, wait a minute, this sounds just like what the ayahuasqueros in South America are talking about, or these chaps up in these caves in the Himalayas have been saying for centuries. It's their description of what's going on is exactly what this cutting edge science is looking like.
Right. Exactly. Which is, a fascinating thing for people to bump up against. I want to make sure we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes, and I want to make sure people know where to find you and what you're up to. What's your website? And I know you have a book.
Yes. The website is Robert Owings, and Owings is spelled owings.com. And I have a book that's just been released a month ago from a publisher in London, from Cosmic Egg, is the imprint. The title is Call of the Forbidden Way. Forbidden Way being shamanism, of course.
Right.
And,
right.
It's available for all of the bookstores, Amazon, the whole works. And it's the first book of a trilogy. We can talk a little bit more about the book after the break or whatever.
That would be great. I hope your trilogy is very much like Douglas Adams' trilogy, which went for 5 books. So,
well, that's probably, I'll be lucky if I see the 5 bucks, but the publisher wants a little more than that. So.
Well, five books.
Oh, 5 books. Well,
five
the trilogy
books,
might
yeah.
be, well, we'll see how the 3 go. And then, you know, if that goes swimmingly great, then I'm sure there'll be more to follow.
Very good. Well, we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest tonight is Robert Owings, and we're talking about shamanism, which is delightful for me. You're listening to The Farkas Files on Empower Radio. This is David Franklin Farkas. And don't go nowhere. There's a whole lot more, and we're going to have some more fun. Stay tuned.
A cat, and have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side, and you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Robert Owings. And we're talking about shamanism, one of my favorite things to talk about. So your book is about shamanism, and it's a fascinating title. What is the underlying, you know, it's a book and it's going to be a trilogy. What's the underlying idea that you're bringing to people about shamanism, the meaning of shamanism? What is shamanism?
Shamanism is just sort of a vehicle here for a lot of different elements that I weave into the story. So in some ways, it's like an old Alfred Hitchcock thing where you have some, somebody who's had a very ordinary life, and suddenly they fall into a strange other world, and they're having to learn quickly. And right. So that is the case for my protagonist, who is a documentary filmmaker who was invited to the Lakota Reservation to film a gathering of medicine men from all across North America, and they're talking about some big spooky stuff that he just thinks that's in for the Indians. He just doesn't pay much attention to it while he's filming, but then he gets a series of bad dreams, and a Native American who comes to help him edit the film realizes he's been affected by being there, and he thinks he's going to have this exorcism to get himself out of it, only to be pulled in further and to a world he has no knowledge of, or and certainly no interest in being in. But he is ineluctably pulled into this, and it started being a Native American looking story, but then the Indians kick him out after a while to go work with this sort of Shakti woman, who is all of this Eastern Asian spirituality, and has spent all this time in ashrams in India, and she's his new teacher, and he can't stand her, and that's
about right.
But ultimately, he falls in love with her, but they still have this very distant. It's a professional relationship, and his quest is to find his own spiritual power, which he has to go through all of this exercises and education to, and it's also all of this is driven by a lot of plant medicine sessions. So there's a lot of altered state stuff going on. And what he ultimately ends up with is connecting to a Tibetan Dharmapala, a wrathful deity, as his power source. And this god would just as soon kill him as help him. It's a very gnarly situation. But the thing that is the urgency throughout all of this is there has been an arrival of an alien energy coming to planet Earth that's needing to migrate here. They basically have no need for human beings. At best, they might see us as cattle. And this brings up a lot of what Stephen Hawking talks about. If some advanced civilization were to come here, why would they, at best, they might see us as something that belongs in a museum or a zoo. All of the shamans and spirit workers, the medicine people around the world are trying to combat this alien invasion, as it were, because they're the only ones that have the kind of psychic spiritual power to combat these beings, because there's nothing you could do military about it. So that's the story of all that, what happens. And then the other two books from this just flow on out and bring in more complexity and other things.
Sounds absolutely, absolutely fascinating. And as you were laying it out, I was like, oh, you're going there with that. Mm-hmm. And then you're going there too. Sounds absolutely wonderful. And I love being able to do that in what seems to be fiction, because most of shamanism is done with stories. The teachings are stories. The way that a shamanic journey is seeing a story unfold. It's all symbolic. And so it sounds like an absolutely wonderful book. I'm looking forward to reading it.
It's a ripping good yarn if you don't believe in any of this stuff. So it's that.
And if you believe in it, and see, that's the thing about shamanism. Shamanism is not about belief. Shamanism is about experience.
Right.
Which is what people who are faith-based are frightened of. You know, what in the world are you talking about? And you're going to do what? And you've seen what?
And some of the people in the shamanic world have not, I've kicked some sacred cows there too. So.
Sure. Sure. Well, yeah. there's an incredibly wide range of experience and experiences, and, you know, people are at thresholds of those various experiences at different times. If you're in a relationship with people who know what they're talking about with this stuff, when you have those experiences, you have a way to sort it out. If it comes unbidden suddenly, it's just freaky, and some people will find a teacher and some people will go to their doctor, and the doctor will say, this is crazy stuff, and lock them up and give them medication to make the crazy stuff go away, which is unfortunate. Are you familiar with Stanislav Grof?
Yes, he was actually, I worked with Stan a little bit.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm jealous. I'm envious. His work in spirit, what he originally called spiritual emergency, which describes that situation of suddenly having an opening to this kind of reality, and later he called it spiritual emergence. They created a network of people who were ready to help someone who had that experience, give them a safe place to be, ground them, teach them ways to sort it out and to not be terrified by it and settle into it, so that they didn't wind up presenting themselves to the medical establishment and getting sucked into that stuff. And I always use the disclaimer, there are people that need to be on medication and there are people that need some period of time in a hospital. There are certainly those circumstances. But this stuff is hard to understand for people who have never touched on it, but it all over the world, it's just part of experience.
It's in our DNA, but if you've been completely outside of contact to the realm or the worldview of shamanism, it will look pretty nuts to you.
Well, and the scary stories. Right. And the stories that have been woven in Western religion about anything that is outside of the way that they present things makes all of the shamanic and, you know, anything that's different. So indigenous religions are not necessarily shamanic, but all of that has been defined as being bad and wrong, and they attach being demonic to it. And basically it's, well, you're not like us, so you must be from the devil. And that is so obviously not the case to me.
When you read the Bible, you'll pick out all the shamanic things that are going on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Once you know what you're looking at and what that aspect of reality is, it's all there. It can't not be there. I have often said that Jesus was a shaman. Everything that he did that was considered a miracle is the kind of stuff that shamans do.
Mm-hmm.
His explanations and his symbolism were very much the kinds of things that exist in shamanic story and shamanic journeying. But on the other hand, I think Einstein was kind of a shaman too. Everything that he came up with, he did in a thought experiment. So yeah. he would play violin until he got into a meditative state, and then he would ask a question and he would have a vision. And he would watch that unfold, and then he'd come back and he could do the math. Most of us can't. But that methodology of going into a meditative state and asking and then watching is a shamanic technique.
Yes. And anything to do with really spirit and science are really, they support each other. And this mm-hmm. is not something that people should separate into completely different. If you don't have solid science and you don't have, there's fallacies there. And the science is filled with questions too. I mean, it just keeps what ifs and how, and the more we know,
the nature of the scientific method is to constantly be asking questions and challenging, what is already known. And frequently there are longstanding disagreements. I mean, Einstein really didn't like quantum mechanics.
No, he did not.
He really struggled with that for a long time.
Yeah.
But that struggle that all of those people had at the beginning of the 20th century absolutely changed everything. You know, people think it's all, you know, strange esoteric stuff, and every bit of technology we have now is based on quantum physics. All cell phones and all the other stuff, it's all mm-hmm. based on advanced physics that most people never even have heard of.
So
it's fascinating stuff. So in an indigenous culture in which the perspective is that communication with the spirit world is just part of life, and there are ways that you invoke spirit, there are ways that you acknowledge spirit, it's all part of daily life. And when you have those moments where you do make the connection, it's a very important and special event. And obviously there are rituals and transitions and assorted other things for people in the tribe that are based on that, things like walkabout and vision quest, where you basically go out looking for that experience. But, you know, I've always said that being trained as a shaman is becoming so used to things that would make anybody else go running into the woods with their hair on fire, just getting used to weirdness, that when something really weird is confronting you, you just say, oh, that's interesting. And you ask spirit, what would you have me do now? Why am I being shown this? And what is my task now?
Yeah.
And
then sorting through that with some in-depth reflection and not necessarily taking it at face value.
Well, that's getting there, and learning all of that so that you can be in that moment and have the interaction in the moment is the whole challenge and the whole training. And a lot of the training is terrifying.
Quite. Yes.
And those turning points are terrifying. When I started meditating, my yoga teacher was like, yeah, you got to meditate. If you're not meditating, you're not doing the practice, blah, 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 blah. So I started meditating and I immediately started seeing really strange, scary stuff. And for whatever reason, I had the personal whatever to say, well, I'm not crazy, so that must be real, and I just have to find someone that knows what it is. I didn't freak out.
Yeah, good for you.
And it took, right, which is pretty unusual. And I found, at the time, a Cheyenne medicine woman who was giving workshops and stuff, and basically she did a grandmotherly thing. Oh, honey, that's just the lower astral plane. Sorry, that's the first thing you saw. Here's what you need to know. You know, it was very matter of fact. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's what that is? All right. Now, how do I not go to the bad neighborhood? And, you know, for other people, if they had had that, if I had had that experience and freaked out, I could have been hospitalized. And why that wasn't my experience is conjecture. But I had two teachers, and my short version of the way they trained me was they threw me in the deep end of the swimming pool and watched to see if I was drowning. This, here's an experience you should have. Whack.
Yeah.
Because it's all about experience. It's not about your thoughts about it. It's not about the explanations. It's not about the, even your emotions about the situation. It's about the experience.
Well, there's that bifurcation point where you realize you are not in control, and you're either going to experience this and open to it, or you're going to shut down, run away, hide. It really helps if you have some guidance with those moments. It's being open to seeing where they lead. And it's a complex, multifaceted engagement, and there's a lot of different agencies of consciousness out there with their agendas and some, you know, what is it they want, what they're doing, and how will they want to pull you in? Will they teach you, or do they want to maybe suck off of your energy or whatever? But this is where it helps having some support.
Right. Both to explain it and to teach you how to deal with it so that you don't get sick in one way or another from whatever the experience is. I'm looking forward to seeing how you weave in the story of aliens, because I have this ongoing conversation with a number of friends, physical and non-physical, about what's an alien and what's a demon.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they related? That we can do this in the next 2 or 3 minutes, but that there are intelligences that either don't care about us or want to use us as an energy source or enslave us or whatever their agenda is, and how that manifests is a big part of what I look at. And it's interesting being able to look at it and not freak out.
There are and for those people who don't have these experiences, or you know, don't get in the deep end of the pool, it sounds crazy, but there are so many different forms of consciousness activating in the cosmos, and and you can encounter these, and there are ones who are angelic and healing and teaching, and then there are others that are not and can be malevolent, even a group that a lower unit that I call classifies parasites that kind of attach to you, some of the ones that look the scariest are actually the great teachers. That's how I encountered them. And they just come on so terrifying when you first encounter them. But if you can hang with them, then they're so wonderful.
And wonderful allies. I have a couple of allies for doing certain kinds of clearing work that many people are terrified of, and the stories about them are terrifying. And, you know, they're good friends, and we work together. So, indeed, there's some scary stuff that looks scary, and it's intended to be scary because that's their job.
Exactly.
They can't do what they do unless they have that persona and that energy behind them. You know, it's like a drill sergeant has to be a drill sergeant to do what they need to do. And they may or may not enjoy it. Many of them don't. It's just the job.
They sure dress cool, though. I mean, they're just resplendent, whatever, however they show up.
Right. There are some really fascinating things in the universe. We don't have enough time to tell very many more stories.
Yeah.
So besides writing the book, what else are you up to these days? You have other projects that you're involved in?
The books are really sort of the main body inside of that matrix of my spiritual work. But I have colleagues that I confer with and people that I deal with. And I try to, when I'm not doing things of this nature, I try to play some music and get a little better on the guitar, which has been a multi-decade project. And I have a regular job that I have to work at, some part-time sort of thing I do. But I have to, I have an ordinary, normal life for the most part.
Yeah, I tried to do that for a while.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time. I want to make sure people know where to find you and know how to find the book. What's your website again?
Robert Owings, and Owings is O-W-I-N-G-S, so robertowings.com. The book is Call of the Forbidden Way, and people can just go and order it. It's out there, and hope they do. And if they do, go to my website. Send me a note. Let me know what your thoughts are on it, and I'd really appreciate hearing from readers. I've had some really wonderful endorsements and readers' response, which you can see on the website.
Well, it's so exciting. First book and getting it out there and that whole process is just so exciting. So congratulations. And
thank you.
Enjoy it. So, Robert, if you want to hang out after the show, we can talk some more if you like.
Oh, I would like that a lot.
And we will have more fun.
Yeah.
So my guest tonight has been Robert Owings. His book is, tell me again.
Call of the Forbidden Way.
Call of the Forbidden Way. Available everywhere, Amazon and all the other places we can get books now. And check it out. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Robert, thank you so much for being on the show.
David, I've really enjoyed it. It's been good.
Thank you. And if any of you got curious about who is this guy David and what does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And Cleverly Hiding in Plain View is every technology I could think of to get in touch with me, including a link to schedule an appointment. I'll do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it happens to be that is stuck or problematic. And we'll see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, that's Cleverly Hiding at thefarkasfiles.com. We've been doing this now for 5 years, so there are hundreds of wonderful interviews with fascinating people. The archive is right there at thefarkasfiles.com, but the best way to listen these days is to get the app from Empower Radio, and you can very conveniently listen to any of the shows. Empower Radio has programming 24/7, all kinds of wonderful people and fascinating shows. So take advantage of that. That's the easiest way. But we're also on all the streaming outlets, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes Podcast. Just search for Empower Radio or Farkas Files and you will find us. which is the amazing thing about this moment in time and the technology that we have. You can listen to any of the shows anytime you want to, anywhere you are. It's just so wonderful that we can share it this way. And I so appreciate that you hang out with me, because if you weren't hanging out with me, why would I do the show? So this has been a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you one and all for being here, wherever you are, whenever you are. I hope you have a wonderful time. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.